I have to admit that I am a true crime buff. I listen to the podcast and I watch videos and am both fascinated by these stories as well as horrified by the pitiful depths of loneliness that human nature can reach at times. And generally, these crimes are committed for something as pathetic as money. I mean, solely money. Just think about it. Killing someone for money, or worse yet, killing a loved one for money. Now, I know that in this world anything is possible, so that doesn't make it that unusual, but I guess the fact that it happens with the frequency that it does, I find that mind-boggling. And anyway, as you would expect, the majority of these cases take place in the United States, the sort of true crime capital of the world. But every once in a while, a grisly story appears in countries like Spain, and it will grab the nation's attention for a few days before something else takes its place. Now, the story, this recent story that I'm going to tell you about, depressed me so much when I found out about it, made me so distraught, struck me as so tragic that I oddly enough, feel that I have to share it with you. So let's start. The one I learned about it while I was having my mid-morning coffee break and was watching the news in this bar, the way you might in Spain. The morning news shows on Spanish TV. The subject matter tends to be sensationalist in nature, and the networks will often have the most important information in a text form at the bottom half of the screen to ensure that they're getting everyone's attention. And the news that I'm going to tell you about took place in a town that's about 30 minutes southeast of Madrid. It's a town called Morata de Tajuña. It's a classic village. It has its old history and its traditions. And as opposed to many villages all over Spain, where the population has declined, Morata is actually still doing fairly well. It's fairly healthy. In fact, its population has risen quite a bit in the past 30 years. And the reason is probably its proximity to the capital, so people will want to live on the outside of the city and maybe work in Madrid. But it's also been boosted in large part by the number of immigrants who were looking for affordable housing and a chance to live near the city. So many of these towns have been helped by this influx of foreign-born residents. And Morata has people from all over the world. It's a bedroom community, and it's become quite popular for its pastries known as palmeritas. They're sort of a bit doughy, a little bit undercooked and smothered in chocolate for the most part. I think it's in November where they have a local fiesta and it's held to celebrate these things, and it brings in tourists from all over the place. Morata also has a small local Civil War, Spanish Civil War museum, since an important battle was fought nearby. And also there are some pretty cool wineries there that have gotten some good press from the critics, especially the red wines. And that shouldn't surprise us because wine has been an important part of the economy here for centuries. So Morata has got life. And as we shall see, it also has death. Now, let's get started with this story. On January 19th, members of the police discovered the bodies of three siblings, a brother and two sisters. Their names were Amelia Angeles and Pepe Gutierrez Ayuso. And they were discovered in their own home after a month had passed without anyone having seen or heard from them. They were elderly. The newspaper sources vary a little bit, but basically the women were aged between somewhere in the late 60s, 68, 69, and maybe 75, And the man, I believe, Pepe here, was in his late 70s. Now, the neighbors had been the ones who noticed that this place, this home, was eerily quiet for nearly a month. And that's when they decided to contact the mayor, who contacted the local authorities and the police. I believe it was the Guardia Civil, got a warrant to enter the house and do a welfare check. And what they discovered left them and the entire community horrified. It was a gruesome scene of three people sort of piled up inside the house, but near the front door. Their bodies were suffering from advanced decay. And after what clearly seemed to have been the result of a triple murder, and it was. Now, homicides are not that common in Spain in 2023, which was considered to be sort of a bad year. There were a total of 325 murders, which is not nothing, but for a country of nearly 50 million residents, it's not that high. In fact, compared to other countries, Spain's murder rate is one of the lowest in the world at 0.7 homicides for every 100,000 residents. Many of them, or at least a large portion of them, are related to organized crime, maybe gang warfare, and even gender-based violence. But for the police to enter a house and come upon a massacre of these proportions, especially elderly residents, and especially in a small, sort of quiet town, was shocking to many Spaniards and newsworthy for its rarity and brutality. The initial investigation indicated that the victims had been bludgeoned to death with a hard object, possibly a hammer. Their bodies were then partially burned in a feeble attempt to get rid of them or cover up clues. This is just a horrific way of dying. I mean, absolutely dreadful. But then I start to ask myself, how did this happen? I mean, what really happened? What led these three people to this point? I mean, was it just a bad luck moment with a home invasion and the burglar trying to just get rid of them and kill them? That would have been unusual for Spain, since most burglars don't carry lethal weapons. They're trying to get material, money, and things like that. They're not trying to get involved in anything like homicide. Well, when the news first came out, apparently the two women had been victims of a fairly well-known internet fraud scheme known as a military romance scam, in which fraudsters emotionally manipulate their targets and talk them into sending mainly cash for a variety of reasons. This was sort of like that. Remember, I'm not sure if you remember this, the old Nigerian inheritance letter. It was that email you would get, and they would ask you to contribute so that they could get a very substantial inheritance, and you would receive part of it. I still come across it from time to time. Now, this was a little different because those Nigerian emails went straight to the point. Often, in the very first email, they were requesting money from you. This tactic, however, required or requires some previous grooming before the actual scamming begins, or at least the actual requesting of money or whatever begins. The Romeos, in this case, were said to be two members of the United States Armed Services. Yes, that's what it said, and that's what I saw on the screen, the TV screen that day, and that sort of stood out with me too. Naturally, I was intrigued. I had never heard of the military romance trick or scam, so I wasn't entirely sure what was true and what wasn't. But the fact is, they had fallen for these guys and were in love or something like that, and somehow got killed along with the brother, who apparently had nothing to do with anything. Anyway, this is a story that was so random, so bizarre. And the more I read about this story, the more it intrigued me. So, I mean, I just want to know who the scammer was. How did they pull it off? Who would fall for this type of scam? And then why were these siblings, there were these three people killed? I mean, who would kill them? And these are old people. Well, it turns out that this crime was long in waiting. The scammers located just about anywhere in the world, but I guess obviously could speak Spanish, so that could reduce certain locations, laid the foundations of their con at least 6 years ago. They started this maybe even longer than that. It may have been as long as 8 or 9 years. But one thing was for sure, they were prepared to invest a lot of time into luring their victims. The perpetrators wooed the women into believing that they, the people who were involved in this scam, were handsome soldiers from the United States Armed Forces, no less. Dapper individuals. They sent pictures of themselves and they looked great, though it was not an original picture of either one of them. It turned out that one photograph was actually a real NATO general and another was a minister from Latvia. The two sisters swooned at the thought of being able to attract such attractive men. Correspondence was frequent and constant for a very long time. We can assume that the longer it went on, the more deeply involved the women got, and the greater their trust was, as well as the greater their difficulty in getting out of this situation. Now, at some point, they received, the women I'm talking about, received the news that one of the two men had died. And that was very bad news for one of the women. But anyway, they said that he had left a will with an unbelievable sum of $7 million. Now, this is starting to remind us of the scam that you got from those Nigerian emails. Now, to access this will, the women had to give the surviving man large sums of money. I don't know how he justified it. I'm sure he gave some reason. And by large sums, we are talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 400,000 euros. Now, that's a lot of money, no matter how you look at it, no matter where you are from. But in Spain, where the average annual salary is under 30,000 euros a year, it's a huge sum. Then the sisters went to try to get help from friends and neighbors, but no one helped them out there. They also apparently asked to take out a loan from the bank, but the bank sensed it was a fraud. The bank was right and turned them down. It was during this period that they were also told numerous times, apparently, that they were making a big mistake, that this was a scam, and that they shouldn't listen to what this person's telling them. But the worst wasn't over yet. They were about to make a bigger mistake, and they were desperate for cash, and they were looking for help, and they finally resorted to a loan shark, or sort of a makeshift loan shark, a 43-year-old nationalized Spaniard who was originally from Pakistan, named Dilawar Hussein Chaudhary. You'll have to excuse my pronunciation here. He had a locutorio in the nearby town of Arganda. Locutorios are call shops. These are places where you can place long-distance phone calls, use the internet, and send and receive money. Since most of these scams require sending money by way of systems like Western Union, the sisters went to that locale often to wire the money to their boyfriends abroad. Boyfriends, quote unquote, they would send the money by Western Union. And as time went by, a sort of friendship developed between the owner of the store, Mr. Chaudhary, and the women, and apparently they decide to let him in on their little secret. They needed more money and may have even asked if he would be willing to help out. At first, he was reticent to do so, but he agreed to lend the money. And in order to raise the funds to do that, he sold his business. He sold his store and gave them the money. Now, just how much is hard to determine. It's sort of like the other things, and the different news sources give different numbers, different figures. No one seems to have come to a consensus here. I've heard 30,000, 50,000, even 60,000. The last version I heard was that he had given 50,000 euros and was promised he would receive 100,000 in return. Now, as a guarantee that this man would get the money back, the money that he had loaned them, he decided to move into their house and stay there. That way he could keep an eye on the progress of the repayment, which naturally never came. But anyway, the important thing at this point is that these women basically allowed their money lender, a total stranger for the most part, to occupy their home until payment was made in full. A total stranger we're talking about. So now these three siblings plus Mr. Chowdhury were being duped. Now, I don't think our two imaginary American officers could have ever imagined it going that far. And then once the man began to realize that he had been had, or at least he wasn't going to get his money back because the women were being deceived, he went after one of the elderly women, I think it was Amelia, and slapped her in the face. This was last year, January of 2023. And then a month later, he struck, I think the same one, three times in the head with a hammer. He was arrested, removed from the home, and put in jail, and then released in September of that same year in 2023 on the promise he would stay away. This turns out to have been a big error on the part of the Spanish authorities when looked at in hindsight. Now, with what seems like all or most of his money gone, Chaudhry decided to seek revenge on these victims, and he went to their house before Christmas with a metal bar and literally beat them to death, all three of them. A month later, as we were telling you, once news of the murder came out, he surrendered to police and admitted to the crime several times, in fact. And then he was assigned a lawyer, and since then he's been a lot less communicative. Now, for the most part, the police believe he was the murderer, the only murderer. He was the most likely suspect from the beginning, and he has also confessed to it. But they aren't 100% sure there were not other people involved because this story doesn't completely add up. And they are especially curious to find out just how he got into the home, since it seems that the locks to the doors had been changed. So that's where it stands. A heinous act, a tragic ending to a tragic story. But it's left me asking a million questions about just about everything. For example, how did these people fall for it to begin with? We'll have to excuse Pepe since he was disadvantaged intellectually. But Amelia, I believe, was a former teacher and her sister had an antique shop. How could they have fallen for it? Well, it isn't difficult if you're not careful. Pre-internet generations are still fairly susceptible to these kinds of cons. And in Spain, where the age of gullibility is probably lower since the internet took longer to take hold of Spanish society. I mean, back in 2000, I must have been one of the only people I knew who had internet access at home. Most only used the one from the office. So people just didn't know about all the tricks that could be done. Now, I consider myself to be fairly internet savvy when it comes to these things, and I'm pretty much wary of just about anything that comes in to my mailbox and doesn't sound or look right. The same goes for things like Facebook. Even so, a few years ago, I almost got caught by doing a translation and where they were going to try to swindle me of some cash. The offer they were making sounded too good to be true, and it was. And so I managed to catch on before getting too involved, so that was a good thing. These women apparently got snared by an unknown Facebook account, inviting them to become friends, and it went from there. Now, these kinds of messages get to me from time to time, from total strangers asking if they know me from somewhere or why I think I was recommended to them. Anything to strike up a conversation. And when you see that, it's generally bad news. The toughest scammers are those people who disguise themselves as friends or have these fake Facebook accounts and they say it's the name of a friend. And that has sometimes thrown me off a little before I realize something wasn't right. Most times I can figure it out just by sort of the vague way they pick up a conversation with these really unspecific questions and the way they express themselves. It just doesn't sound right. But even so, you have to be on the ball. I have to be on the ball. And it must be infinitely tougher for those people who are less familiar with this deceitful activity. Another question that I asked myself was what their marital status was. No one is saying anything about this, but it'd be interesting to see if they were divorced, widowed, or maybe never married. Old maids, the way they used to call them. Can you imagine? I mean, you are a lonely woman, and suddenly you get the attention you're looking for from this really handsome soldier from abroad, and not only does this crush end up ruining you financially, it gets you killed in a horrible fashion. That would make it even worse. But as I was saying, the fact that they both seem to be single and quite possibly they had never been married. Well, that would be an important thing to know, and it certainly would explain a lot. Because God knows they had been sucked into this scam for years, as far back possibly as 2015. We are talking, years and years and years. And I guess it's at this point, because people would be asking, how would they just keep going with it after all the red flags and the warning signals? Well, sometimes you get sort of that bad gambler's mindset. It starts to take over. You're losing your money, and instead of cutting your losses and pulling out, you keep on playing and playing and playing and doubling down in hopes that that miracle inheritance will appear, but it's a miracle that never appears, and your whole life just goes down the tube, the abyss. And then there is this probably the shame and embarrassment stage, sort of the denial. Several residents who knew them did their best to warn them about what they were doing, but the women refused to accept reality and asserted that it was the neighbors who didn't understand the truth. So one thing is for sure, these poor women and this man who were murdered brutally. It must be said that they were acting foolishly. Now, there is something about this story that sort of reminds me of the great Coen Brothers movie Fargo, where just about everything that takes place, all the illicit behavior, all the violence, all the worst things that happen in that movie are all motivated by money. Now, sure, love and similar emotions may have something to do with this case. In other words, maybe the women are in love and want to believe it. But think about it, they don't even know these men, or they didn't even know them. How much love can you be feeling for someone? How deep was that love? Or were things like greed also making their ability to make smart decisions more difficult? I have a million questions. What were in those emails, for example? What did they say? How did the scammers actually get them to send that much money? 400,000 euros. And what did they say to these women that so enticed them? And here's another one. Do the scammers know what's happened? They certainly know something's up because the women are definitely not writing back. So, do they know that they've been murdered? And if they do, how do they feel about it? I mean, they were after their money, but they probably didn't expect anyone to die. And does that bother them? I'm not really sure if it would. I mean, these are people who know that they are dealing with elderly people and they are stealing from them without an iota of conscience about their behavior. So maybe this doesn't affect them. And I find that shocking too. What about the neighbors in a small town? No one decided to do anything for a month. Sure, some said, well, they thought they might have been away for Christmas, but really, a month? Where did these people have any other family? I mean, there were no clues. It seemed so counterintuitive to the way people in pueblos and these villages act. I mean, they're so on top of everything. How could they let this one get through? And then what about Mr. Chaudhary? How did he fall for it all? He owned an internet shop. How was it possible that he had no idea what was going on? Aside from some serious anger management problems, which we clearly see that he has, what did he expect to gain by killing the three? And what were their conversations like? Now, I have to admit, there is just one thing that's true, and I can say this in his favor, is that at least he had admitted doing the deed. And he came forth, and even though he probably knew that they were closing in on him, to his credit, his tiny credit, he owned up and showed up. Anyway, it's just been one heartbreaking fact after another. How was it possible for three adults to let their world come undone in this bizarre fashion, this tragic fashion? I mean, these poor people not only had a run-in with one evil person, but they had a second one with another evil person. And it sort of made me feel like I was experiencing a sort of Joseph Conrad moment. But in this case, it's three unsuspecting individuals who delve into the heart of darkness at the very lowest realms of human nature, and what they see is not a very nice thing. Now, I will continue to follow this story as things develop, and I will let you know more if there is something I think worth telling you about. And anyway, we hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain-Demain. If that's possible, given today's subject matter, please feel free to leave us any comments or questions because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos, or if you wish to support Brian Spain-Demain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.